Task 2. You will hear part of a program. Read through the notes below and complete them by filling in the gaps with the exact words you hear. Gap 0 is an example. Now, read the notes.
You see, imposter syndrome, it's not my problem to solve. And it's not yours either. So today, if you'll humor me, I want to squeeze in one last history lesson before we leave this place. Let's go back to the 1890s, a few short decades after Smith was founded. Doctors had identified a never-before-seen medical malady, one that threatened to wreak havoc on the entire female population. That condition was called bicycle face. You see, the original bicycle had one gigantic wheel in the front and one tiny little wheel in the back. Imagine a hula hoop and a dinner plate. Not easy to ride. But then along comes this revolutionary concept. Two wheels of the same size. Go figure. The power of equality, baby. And as a result, cycling takes off. And it takes off in Europe and North America, and it takes off for women. But with the rise of women riding the bicycle comes the rise of bicycle face. Here are the symptoms of this terrifying condition. These are direct quotes, by the way. Flushed cheeks, hard clenched jaw, bulging eyes, an expression that is either anxious, irritable, or at best, stony. That's right. Long before there was resting bitch face, there was resting bike face. Now, here's the thing. It wasn't just women who were riding bicycles. In fact, the majority of those who had taken up the hobby were men. But bicycle face? That was strictly a woman's disease. Why? Because bicycle face was invented to purely scare women off their wheels. Here's what was really going on. Back then, the bicycle became a symbol for a growing feminist movement. All of a sudden, women could go further and faster, and they didn't need to wait around for a gentleman to show up with his horseback and give them a ride. Suffragists could now meet with one another from town to town, and they would take their signs and they would affix them to the front of their handlebars. Because of the bicycle, women even started wanting different clothes. Victorian hoop skirts? Psh, so last season. Women wanted breezy bloomers, better for pedaling. As one magazine wrote in 1896, to men, the bicycle was merely just a new toy. But to women, it was the steed upon which they rode into the new world. Of course, it wasn't long before men started seeing bikes as more than just a new toy, too. To them, bicycles and the behavior they were enabling with women were jarring, dangerous, threatening to the status quo. More than a century later, we can see bicycle face for what it is, or what it was. Not a medical mistake, but a deliberate tool, a strategy wielded by powerful men to put women back in their place, to make us stop peddling. Ridiculous name aside, I think that there's something deeper here. I think that there's a lot we can learn about imposter syndrome from Bicycle Face. Both of them are strategies used to hold women back, and it's up to us to not take the bait. The way our culture talks about imposter syndrome, you also could mistake it for a medical condition, but it's not. Leslie Jamison wrote about the origins of the phrase in The New Yorker a few months ago, and she talked about how the two researchers who had first talked about imposter syndrome didn't call it an imposter syndrome at all. In fact, they referred to it as imposter phenomenon, and it was based on high-achieving white ladies. It was never meant to be pathologized. Still, like Bicycle Face before it, imposter syndrome was rooted in misogyny. It's no coincidence that the concept first emerged as Title IX became law and women started going to college, or that it gained traction just as Roe v. Wade was decided. And now that women had control over their bodies, they were starting to enter the workforce in droves. Just like Bicycle Face before it, imposter syndrome was a reaction to women's progress. But this time, the backlash was even more insidious, which is why today, instead of telling you how to overcome imposter syndrome, we're going to question the whole concept. And I want to do that by breaking down some lies we're told about imposter syndrome, starting with the big one, that maybe there's something wrong with you, that imposter syndrome is grounded in actual deficiency. Imagine you're riding a bicycle up a hill, and as you pedal your way to the top, you fixate on your destination and you clench your jaw. That doesn't mean that you have bicycle face. That means you're riding a bicycle. Imposter syndrome is based on the premise that we're the problem, that if we feel underqualified, it's because we are, that if we worry that we don't have what it takes, it's because we don't. But in my experience, I have found that discomfort, anxiety, to just be a natural human reaction. You know, when I showed up at that fancy corporate law firm for the very first time, I had not just one, but two Ivy League postgraduate degrees. But still, I felt like everybody was speaking a different language.
Now, listen again.
You see, imposter syndrome, it's not my problem to solve. And it's not yours either. So today, if you'll humor me, I want to squeeze in one last history lesson before we leave this place. Let's go back to the 1890s, a few short decades after Smith was founded. Doctors had identified a never-before-seen medical malady, one that threatened to wreak havoc on the entire female population. That condition was called bicycle face. You see, the original bicycle had one gigantic wheel in the front and one tiny little wheel in the back. Imagine a hula hoop and a dinner plate. Not easy to ride. But then along comes this revolutionary concept. Two wheels of the same size. Go figure. Power of equality, baby. And as a result, cycling takes off. And it takes off in Europe and North America, and it takes off for women. But with the rise of women riding the bicycle comes the rise of bicycle face. Here are the symptoms of this terrifying condition. These are direct quotes, by the way. Flushed cheeks. Hard clenched jaw. Bulging eyes. An expression that is either anxious, irritable, or at best, stony. That's right. Long before there was resting bitch face, there was resting bike face. Now here's the thing. It wasn't just women who were riding bicycles. In fact, the majority of those who had taken up the hobby were men. But bicycle face? That was strictly a woman's disease. Why? Because bicycle face was invented to purely scare women off their wheels. Here's what was really going on. Back then, the bicycle became a symbol for a growing feminist movement. All of a sudden, women could go further and faster, and they didn't need to wait around for a gentleman to show up with his horseback and give them a ride. Suffragists could now meet with one another from town to town, and they would take their signs and they would affix them to the front of their handlebars. Because of the bicycle, women even started wanting different clothes. Victorian hoop skirts? Psh, so last season. Women wanted breezy bloomers, better for pedaling. As one magazine wrote in 1896, to men, the bicycle was merely just a new toy. But to women, it was the steed upon which they rode into the new world. Of course, it wasn't long before men started seeing bikes as more than just a new toy, too. To them, bicycles and the behavior they were enabling with women were jarring, dangerous, threatening to the status quo. More than a century later, we can see bicycle face for what it is, or what it was. Not a medical mistake, but a deliberate tool, a strategy wielded by powerful men to put women back in their place, to make us stop pedaling. Ridiculous name aside, I think that there's something deeper here. I think that there's a lot we can learn about imposter syndrome from bicycle face. Both of them are strategies used to hold women back, and it's up to us to not take the bait. The way our culture talks about imposter syndrome, you also could mistake it for a medical condition, but it's not. Leslie Jamison wrote about the origins of the phrase in The New Yorker a few months ago, and she talked about how the two researchers who had first talked about imposter syndrome didn't call it an imposter syndrome at all. In fact, they referred to it as imposter phenomenon. And it was based on high-achieving white ladies. It was never meant to be pathologized. Still, like bicycle face before it, imposter syndrome was rooted in misogyny. It's no coincidence that the concept first emerged as Title IX became law and women started going to college. Or that it gained traction just as Roe v. Wade was decided. And now that women had control over their bodies, they were starting to enter the workforce in droves. Just like bicycle face before it, imposter syndrome was a reaction to women's progress. But this time, the backlash was even more insidious, which is why today, instead of telling you how to overcome imposter syndrome, we're going to question the whole concept. And I want to do that by breaking down some lies we're told about imposter syndrome, starting with the big one, that maybe there's something wrong with you, that imposter syndrome is grounded in actual deficiency. Imagine you're riding a bicycle up a hill, and as you pedal your way to the top, you fixate on your destination and you clench your jaw. That doesn't mean that you have bicycle face. That means you're riding a bicycle. Imposter syndrome is based on the premise that we're the problem, that if we feel underqualified, it's because we are, that if we worry that we don't have what it takes, it's because we don't. But in my experience, I have found that discomfort, anxiety, to just be a natural human reaction. You know, when I showed up at that fancy corporate law firm for the very first time, I had not just one, but two Ivy League postgraduate degrees. But still, I felt like everybody was speaking a different language.
This is the end of task 2.